Charles Bedell, Jr., appearing on behalf of Appellant Richard Nguyen-Torn. Your Honors, this appeal raises a question of ineffective assistance of counsel in negotiating a guilty plea under the standard of India versus Kentucky. That is, whether the immigration consequences were adequately conveyed to the defendant.
He is subject
to deportation. I believe he's subject to removal and it's temporarily suspended.
He has withholding, right?
It's withholding.
He has withholding. Now, will the results in this case have any bearing on his asylum?
Yes. If the judgment is set aside and then renegotiated with a loss amount under $10,000, the immigration court will rehear the matter and remove the removal order.
Well, he is a little quick, isn't it? Because he had asylum when we started this. And with the asylum when he started it, then we have to change a plea. And we got $13,301. And if it had been under 10, there may have been no worry whatsoever. But then, even after getting that, the Immigration Department withheld his removal. There's nothing in the withholding of removal which suggests that this particular case is going to make a difference on whether his removal is withheld.
The removal order itself depends on this fine and the fact that he admitted that amount in the U.S. District Court in 2010.
So if you're saying the removal order itself suggests this is going to determine whether he is removed?
Yes.
Where is that in the record?
That is, of course, it's not in the record. But
well, that seems to me that it follows that. I never read anything like that.
Well, the decision in Nijuan holds that the offense cannot lead to removal unless it's just on the generic basis of the offense. It has to be something that the defendant admitted. The immigration court here said directly, you admitted an amount over $10,000. That's why you are removable. And that's
okay,
why
I hear you. I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss something. The second, why is this a more usual? Why is this a remedy which he has at all? It seems to me that the writ of error, quorum nobis, is supposed to be a remedy he has when he has no other remedy.
He does not have habeas corpus because he, by the time he got through with the immigration authorities, and
he doesn't have habeas corpus because he didn't use it.
He didn't know he had it. He didn't know he had a habeas claim. No, that's the point. That's the whole point of quorum nobis. Something that you find out later. And this is a classic situation where we're going to see quorum nobis because it's when you get to immigration court that you find out the hidden knife that was in.
Well, I guess if there was a hidden, then it is an unusual situation. But I guess we're back to then, was it really hidden?
Well, we think that's why it merits review at this level. And yes, it was hidden. It wasn't communicated to him. He filed a declaration in which he said that it wasn't communicated to him. We don't have any declarations from defense counsel. I tried. I'm sure the government may have tried. But at any rate, there's no answer from him. And indeed, the conclusion is inescapable that he was not told of this deportation or this removal consequence.
Well, even if counsel is, it may not have been as clear as he would have liked at this point, but he was told that because he had lost over $10,000, that's right in the plea agreement, that removal is presumptively mandatory.
Okay, ask the government if they think that's an accurate advisement, because their brief says that he was accurately advised off the record that he would not be removed. That's their position. So I propose that question be asked of them.
What do we do with the plea said, yes, Your Honor, is everything he said true, correct, and accurate? Yes, Your Honor. He's admitted in open court to the $13,000. So why doesn't that just resolve it?
Because that's the condition of getting the plea bargain. That's right.
But he's just admitted that he was responsible for $13,000.
People in plea bargains are told you've got two choices. Okay? You either go to prison for 10 or 20 years, or you say these things that the U.S. attorney is going to say.
But
that's what you agree to. That's what a plea bargain is.
But he's told the court that was correct.
Yes, that's.
Was he lying? Was he lying?
Well, let me ask this.
I'll state
that in California, people plead guilty to reckless driving every day of the week as a lesser offense to drunk driving. That doesn't mean that they were reckless driving. Nobody said the California Supreme Court says they weren't reckless. They don't have to be reckless driving. They may have been straight down the middle of the road to exactly where they were supposed to be. And so they're not pleading guilty to what the agreement is. That's the nature of plea bargain.
I would have thought your answer to Judge Bybee would be that he would not have been in a position to be asked that question one way or another if he had been properly advised by counsel.
That's correct.
Counsel had told him, yes. Look, are you going to have a mandatory deportation or removal?
Yes.
If you take this deal, there's no doubt about it, you'll be removed because you're going to have to admit to $13,000.
That's not what he was told.
I don't think he has to deny, in response to his question, that may in fact have been true. I think your position is that he should not have been in a position to be asked one way or another. He had a Fifth Amendment right to remain silent.
I'll adopt everything you just said.
He gave it up. Misunderstanding.
I think you will.
But that's the issue all the way along. It just gets you to a different place.
I don't understand that.
And that is, he claims to have been told certain things by his lawyer. You'll never be deported and so on. We don't have any statement by the lawyer, unlike
Rodriguez-Vegan.
Yes, thank you. Sorry, I get these caffeinated name cases confused, but that's the case I have in mind. So in that case, we had the statement of the defendant, and we also had the larger cooperative statement of his lawyer. We don't have anything like that here. Do we simply believe your client when he says that? I mean, it's easy enough to make up afterwards. I was told the tale by my lawyer.
Well, the district court could have had an evidentiary hearing. I believe we asked for one, but I don't have any power to force him to give us a statement. But what overshadows all of this is that Mr. Nieuwentor's declaration is entirely plausible and almost inescapable. Why would you plead guilty to something that carried a death sentence?
It seems implausible in that if you read the change of plea hearing and what he was told there, if you read the plea agreement and what he was told and what he agreed to there, if you read what he pleaded guilty to one count and what happened there, and if you read the sentencing hearing, it seems totally contradictory.
Let me urge the court to read the defense sentencing memorandum. The defense attorney.
Well, I read a sentencing hearing where counsel got up and said, Your Honor, the defendant is 43 years old. He's facing deportation. He's not a citizen.
I think he's 53.
I might have got that wrong. Last year when we had the discussions before we accepted the plea agreement, I did state very clearly on the record that I believed he would be deported. And I believe that is the case as we sit here today.
Well, that's what I said. Well, let me back up a step. As soon as this was entered, this plea was entered, and the pre-sentence report was prepared, the first thing defense counsel did was file a memorandum that said the loss amount, guess what, is less than $10,000. That is inconsistent with advising somebody to admit an amount over $10,000.
The judge didn't accept that.
And as far as that,
the judge didn't accept it.
Well, that doesn't tell you. We've been asking what's defense counsel's position. We haven't heard from him. There he is. He's saying it is under $10,000.
That is what I said. I said it seems a little uneasy for me to believe what your client now wants to say to help himself out when I read what happened at the change plea hearing. When I read what happened in the plea agreement,
you know,
when I read what happened when he pled guilty, the one count, that's what I said. I'm not talking about what counsel will say or won't say. I'm saying, what did he say to the court? Now he can come in and say whatever he wants to say to try to get out of it.
Well, I was asked the question, what does defense counsel say? That's what defense counsel says.
Now
it's under $10,000.
What was the
question? It's, again, the same answer I gave before. It's the government's position that he was correctly advised that he would not be removed. That's in their brief. That's the position they take.
Well, that in fact, at this point, he hasn't been removed. That's all we can say.
Well,
I looked for the withholding and I couldn't find even the order.
The withholding,
it's not in the record.
And, well, there's a large discussion of it in the immigration court finding about all the reasons why he's not temporarily subject to removal. And that's temporary. Guess what? We have a new administration in Washington. Is this going to change? If this is a sort of Damocles over his head. No one would admit to something like that if they knew that they were exposing themselves to the death penalty if they were returned to Burundi.
Well, I'll take his finger. He's a banana. They're saying that the withholding is not good enough. That's what note 6 looks for.
Yeah, that withholding is?
He's not the equivalent of asylum.
I think his asylum status is
very close. Anyway, you're out of time. Why don't we hear from him?
Thank you.
Brian Fogarty on behalf of the United States. Mr. Nguyen-Torre's trial counsel told him that he would be subject to deportation and that he would ultimately avoid physical removal from the United States. That advice was accurate, and because Mr. Nguyen-Torre got exactly what he was told to expect as a result of his guilty plea.
So it wouldn't give the physical removal part.
Mr. Nguyen-Torre's trial counsel, as alleged in Mr. Nguyen-Torre's affidavit, is that Mr. Nguyen-Torre's trial counsel told him that he would ultimately be saved from deportation, which would be physical removal from the United States.
You're saying physical removal, I mean, this is a gloss you're putting on it. It sounds to me like what I'm saying, what you're saying is my lawyer said, I won't be deported.
Correct.
You'd agree with that?
I'd agree that there are two elements. There's one, the removability, which is the advisement that Mr. Nguyen-Torre's lawyer gave him on the record and the court gave him on the record about whether he'd be subject to deportation, which would be physical removal. And then there's the second element, which is what Mr. Nguyen-Torre's attorney...
The question is, if it is virtually certain that you lose your asylum status, your lawyer has got to tell you it is virtually certain that you're going to lose your asylum status. And then, Rodriguez-Vega says, the fact that you might get other kinds of relief, like CAT or withholding, is not good enough. You have to tell the client unequivocally that this status that you have is asylum beneficiary, you will lose.
And that is what
do you you read Rodriguez-Vegas, I do, as saying that that is what the lawyer must say in the removal, withholding a removal and can't leave not good enough?
I agree that Rodriguez-Vegas says that, yes, you must advise, if it is certain, if the results are certain, you must advise about the, or provide accurate advice consistent with that certainty. Here, Mr. Nguyen-Torres' attorney gave
him that advice. I'm sorry, but the second part of what I said, in that having withholding of removal or can't leave is not equivalent. You've got to make it clear you're going to lose asylum status. And the fact that you might get some other kind of relief is just not good enough. And that's what I read. That's what I read Rodriguez-Vegas to say.
That's correct, Your Honor. And here, Mr. Nguyen-Torres' attorney did just that.
Okay.
He said,
where do we have evidence that he did just that?
He said on the record at the change of plea that Mr. Nguyen-Torres would lose his asylum status.
Okay, let's look at that. What page? Where are you reading from?
Your Honor, that would be it.
Let's look at the language. What line?
I think maybe page 43. I think it's page 43. Thank you, Your Honor.
What line?
That would be lines. He advised lines 10 through 13. The citizenship or any attempt at citizenship would be revoked.
That is the defense lawyer. He's then advised of his rights. He's actually written into the plea agreement. He's been advised of his rights based on the plea. You now believe that he will mandatory be citizenship or any attempt for the citizenship would be revoked and he would be deported. So you read this as saying that's what he advised the lawyer, the client advised the lawyer. It seems to say that this is what the plea agreement says.
Well, this is Mr. Nguyen-Torres' attorney in open court advising the court on what the consequences of Mr. Nguyen-Torres' guilty plea would be.
Well, no, I'm sorry, but where does he say that he advised the client that, in fact, certainly be removed.
The advisement is on the record. It's Mr. Nguyen-Torres' attorney's statement in open court that these are the consequences of his client's guilty plea, and his client is with him in court. And Mr. also, Your Honor, if you turn to Excerpt of Record 92, Mr. Nguyen-Torres' own declaration indicates that his trial counsel showed me, and I'm quoting from the declaration, he showed me the portion of the written plea agreement that indicated that there could be immigration counts.
So did you see the 92?
Yes, 92.
I have a declaration goes from 91. Yes.
92, the last paragraph of 92 and the first paragraph of 93, which states that the written plea agreement contains a clause which states that because the defendant is pleading guilty to access device fraud with a loss amount over $10,000, removal is presumptively mandatory. That's in Mr. Nguyen-Torres' declaration.
But he also says, he showed me the portion of the written plea agreement that indicated that it could be immigration consequences, but he said I was protected by my political asylum status.
And the protection or the facts underlying his political asylum petition, those facts are what enable Mr. Nguyen-Torres to stay in the country as he is today under withholding of removal, which, just to respond to his counsel's argument previously, there's nothing to suggest that that will change, that withholding of removal is indefinite unless there is a change in circumstances.
And you're suggesting then that regardless of what we do here, there's no change of circumstances?
There's no indication from the government's perspective that this case is outcome. If the court were to affirm this, the district court's dismissal of the petition, that that would have an effect on Mr. Nguyen-Torre's petition, or Mr. Nguyen-Torre's status in the United States.
But you don't know, right? You certainly can't guarantee that.
No, I can't.
Because if we were to grant the writ in this case, what follows from that? In habeas, we know that we, you know, oftentimes in the government, you know, 60, 90 days to retry him. What do you do in a case like this with quorum nobis?
Just as a practical matter, if the conviction was vacated, then there would be, the case would be reinstated.
The case would be reinstated. Can it be retried?
Potentially, yes.
And it doesn't violate double jeopardy?
I don't believe
it. He can be subject to a different term of months in prison. So this was went back, and then you came back and you said, okay, it's $73,000 in offers, $240,000 worth of various figures are being thrown around here. Well, suppose that you prove that and convinced a jury of that. If the judge went back and said, the previous sentence was way too high, you had another 2 years to serve, and then you can deal with the immigration folks.
I'm not sure that he could be retried and having already served the sentence that was imposed.
So if he issued the writ, does his conviction just go away?
I would say that there has been no error, so the writ shouldn't.
I don't understand the government's position. If we were to issue the writ, I'm trying to figure out what the consequences are. I'm trying to figure out what happens.
Your Honor,
we don't see a lot of these writs. I'm curious as to what the consequences are.
I assume that this just sets aside the guilty plea, and he can't be charged again. What would prevent the government from charging him with the same crime and going to trial on this?
If the conviction was vacated, then he hasn't been. He has served the custodial sentence as a result of the first sentence.
Would you take that into consideration in what just sentence if he was again found guilty?
I think that's right, Your Honor.
Has he made restitution?
I'm not sure if the restitution amount has
been. Restitution is $13,000 because that was the amount that was found. They pled guilty to. So presumably, if he was retried, even if he didn't get additional time in prison, he might be ordered to pay restitution of $70,000, $250,000, whatever loss was found by a jury.
That's correct, Your Honor. And there's evidence from the sentencing hearing and elsewhere in the record that suggests that the loss amount was potentially much larger than the $13,000 to which he stipulated. And that's another reason why this plea offer was favorable to Mr. Nguyen-Torre and explains, at least in part, why he would accept it.
But it's his call, right? I mean, if he's entitled to believe that the chance he takes, that he might be retried.
But this plea offer provided him capped his exposure in terms of the loss amount, and it also provided him the best mechanism for staying within the United States, which he ultimately has. I see that I've...
Okay, so thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Last time, take a minute for a while.
There'd be no double jeopardy consequence in this case. There's no trial, so there's no double jeopardy protection.
He could be charged.
Right on everything. And if the jury came back and said, you know, we find $250,000 in loss, that would be, he can actually get additional time. And he has paid restitution. That's reflected in the immigration court decision. Basically, the amount of restitution he made, it all good. That was one of the reasons.
That's in the IJ's decision.
Yes, that was one of the reasons cited for giving him non-suspension of removal. The government in this case wants to have the cake and eat it too. They want to point to all of these things and say that he was absolutely going to be deported, and that he knew that. At the same time, being told off the record that he wasn't going to be deported, the standard of going whether this case would have been tried is an objective one. That is, you have to assess the interests of both sides objectively. Would the government honestly take this case to trial just to argue over a loss amount, which they can establish with the trial judge by a preponderance of the evidence, without even having a jury trial? It's all relevant conduct.
Well, they can't establish a loss for him unless he pleads guilty again, can they?
as they absolutely can. Once he pleads guilty to one count, then count two is
guilty. His guilty plea is going to be gone if you win.
Well, the question is not whether he's going to plead guilty. I believe that he would plead guilty if we went back. It's just that he wouldn't admit the loss amount when we're done. That's the whole question. We would have, otherwise we'd have a jury trial over that, over just the loss amount. The district court, I don't think, would tolerate that. The district court could find the same thing itself and impose the same sentence or a greater sentence. He risks all that, but it's worth it to